Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
With Deshaun Watson in the update there. Somewhere the Texans have got to be popping bottles over the Russell Wilson story, which I will get to a little bit later on. Point being, if it weren't for Russ, all the heat around that story, everybody would be squarely focused on the Texans and the complete joke and embarrassment that they have become. I say this because Russ's situation is actually stealing the spotlight from Deshaun's situation. And the situation in Houston is, well, thanks to Russ, that's their biggest win since Houston got up 24-0 on Kansas City in the playoffs last year and let it get away. And let me tell you, this situation they're dealing with right now, they're going to choke on this situation like they did in that game because that's who they are, that's what they do. As an example, you know, like the time they told Deshaun Watson he'd be involved in the hiring of a new head coach and a GM, only to ignore the guy outright. Not only was he not involved, not only was he not consulted, he found out that Nick Caserio was hired through social media. So what that brings us to is there's incompetent, and then there's stupid and incompetent. Then there's stupid, incompetent, and offensive. You tell your franchise quarterback that he's going to be involved in hiring a new GM, and not only is he not involved in that process, but you don't tell him when that process is over. He just finds out through social media like everybody else. I mean, that is downright moronic, but so on brand. So dumb, but so on brand for the Texans. So, of course, there's no surprise that Deshaun Watson finally did get around to demanding a trade a few weeks back. So then your question is, how are they going to handle that situation? Will the Texans admit that they butchered it in every way possible and then make it right with their best player ever? Because if that were the plan, that didn't work. Because they did not consider his opinion when they hired their head coach, David Culley. And the head coach finally got around to talking to Watson, and apparently that went horribly as well. According to reports, Watson and Culley spoke last Friday. Watson told the head coach he does not want to play for the Texans ever again. You're kind of like, yo, coach, nice to meet you. Congrats on the new opportunity. I am never playing a single snap for you. Get me the hell out of here. Actually, pretty brass. Nothing like rolling into a conversation with the new head coach and then telling him point blank, hey, good to have you here, coach. Just know I'm not going to be here. I'm not playing for you or anybody else. So we've got a trade demand now, right? How are the Texans handling the trade demand? Because he's made it pretty clear he does not want to be there. Here's your answer. They're handling it by sending it to voicemail. Literally. Not a figure of speech, but literally. According to Tom Pelissero, quote, the Texans remain unwilling to discuss QB Deshaun Watson with other teams, some of whom have resorted to leaving voicemails with trade offers, per sources, end quote. I mean, that's incredible. I mean, amazing. Teams are having to resort to leaving voicemails with trade offers because nobody will pick up. Sidebar, by the way, regarding voicemail messages. By the way, who does that? Is there anybody anywhere other than teams calling the Texans who leave voicemails these days? Add that to the list of our universal reasons to go. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't condone violence. You should exhaust every possible option before you resort to violence of any sort, period. Having said that, and we've talked about this numerous times, but there are a few universal circumstances where I think we would all agree that are reasons to go, that are reasons to give somebody else the hands. I don't condone violence, but there are a few things that we'd all agree on. Like somebody spits in your face, that's a reason to go. Somebody insults your race or religion, that's a reason to go. Somebody threatens somebody you love, that's a reason to go. And if somebody leaves you a voicemail message, that damn well is a reason to go. That might even be the biggest reason on that list. Nobody leaves voicemails anymore. No one who has any respect for their fellow human being. And why is that? It's complete overkill. It's like an unspoken rule of engagement right about now. Really, for society overall, texting is king. Even that is becoming a burden of sort. That's why emojis were invented and why people can just drop a thumbs up or a heart response now, so they can keep the communication and the engagement as efficient as possible. Besides, a missed call alert tells you everything you need to know. You missed a call. Nobody wants to go into a voicemail box and listen to somebody tell them they missed a call. We already know. We want our communication streamlined, fast, efficient, and as non-invasive as possible. And leaving a voicemail is the dead-ass opposite of all that. So I digress. My point is, pick up the freaking phone, dopes. Then again, if you're looking for the Texans to do the right thing, to do the smart thing, you're begging. No, instead, they're just going to keep on pissing off Deshaun Watson all offseason with their pettiness and their stupidity, to the point where this guy refuses to show up, and then the story gets even bigger and even worse. Right about now, I'm trying to consider or conjure up a worse-run professional franchise in any sport, and nobody is coming to mind. They got lucky as hell when Watson fell to them in the draft, and instead of devoting all their energy and resources to protecting this guy and building around him and treating him like the potential Hall of Famer he is, they have stripped him of his weapons and protection, and they've gone out of their way to alienate and ignore this guy. In other words, they also had a 24-0 lead in life, and they turned that into a 51-31 loss. Great work, fellas. Really good stuff. So really, there is no reason to believe they're going to turn this thing around. And so far, their strategy, if there is one, does not seem to be working, because yesterday, Deshaun tweeted, and I quote, "Loyalty is everything. Don't you ever forget it." I don't know. Maybe he's just dropping a future lyric, because that is what that is. But it also seems to sum up how that guy's feeling right now, what his current situation is. And that is that the team has never been loyal to him or valued him in a way that he would like to be valued, and I doubt he's going to forget that. I've got a feeling that's more what that tweet is about. Voicemail messages. How's that work? Like, leave your message after the beep. Yeah, hi, Nick? Yeah, this is John Gruden with the Las Vegas Raiders. Yeah, how you doing there, Nick? Hope you're well. Hey, anyway, I was thinking maybe I could take Deshaun off your hands. How does Derek Carr sound? What? You like that, right? Maybe Derek Carr and a one this year and a one next year. You know, I'll tell you what. I like you, Nick. I'll throw in Josh Jacobs. Let me know what works for you. My number is 555-555-5555. If you could just get back at your convenience, that'd be great. Hey, and I'll throw in Jonathan Abram. Beep! I mean, seriously, how's that going to work? How are they going to get this done? How's it going to work? They're not even picking up the phone. Teams making trade offers via voicemail. The most Texans thing ever. Fred Warner is my guest. Fred, good to have you back. How are you, Fred?
I'm outstanding, Jim. Thanks for having me on, man.
Always good to talk to you, Fred. So bring me up today. You're coming off an amazing year. I just read the stats. From a team standpoint, Fred, obviously a little bit more challenging, and the season did not end the way you would have hoped. How have you gotten after the offseason? Are you kind of relaxing, laying out, or are you already at work and back on your grind?
Yeah, I had to take a little time off, you know, just reflect over the season, rest the body, you know, just to make sure I'm getting my mind right into you know, getting a great offseason to work in, and that's what I'm doing now. You know, I'm back full go into it, trying to really dial in all the details of my everyday just regimen, and hoping that I can take that next step in my career.
All right, so I mentioned the numbers. You had a great, great year, All-Pro, Pro Bowl. In terms of taking that next step, what does that look like to you, your next step, and what are you working on?
Well, I mean, just overall consistency. You know, I played at a high level this past season, but, you know, what are ways – just trying to find ways to really improve and improve the guys around me, being a leader for this team, and – you know, ultimately trying to get that prize at the end of it, which is a Super Bowl. You know, that's my number one goal, the All-Pros, the Pro Bowls, those are all great. And, you know, just to earn that respect, it's such an honor and it's very humbling. But at the end of the day, I want that Lombardi. So just finding ways to get guys together or figure out ways where I could help any way that I can, that's what I'm trying to look for right now.
Are you feeling stressed out? Probably so. Most people are. Listen, don't let the stress of daily life weigh on your body. Whether you're an elite athlete or somebody like me, just trying to make it through the day tension-free, Theragun can help. Theragun is the handheld percussive therapy device that releases your deepest muscle tension using a scientifically calibrated combo of depth, speed, and power. And it's as quiet as an electric toothbrush. This product is incredible. The Gen 4 Theragun doesn't just feel good, it gets to the source of the pain by releasing tension using Theragun's signature percussive therapy, which goes 60% deeper than vibration alone. Whether you want to treat your muscle tension from working out, or maybe you have an injury, or it's just the stresses of everyday life, there is no substitute for the Theragun Gen 4. Theragun is trusted by 250 professional sports teams like Real Madrid and elite athletes like Paul George, DeAndre Hopkins, Maria Sharapova, hundreds of thousands of customers, and myself. I have mine. I absolutely love this product. Try Theragun for 30 days, starting at only $199. Go to Theragun.com/Rome right now and get your Gen 4 Theragun today. This product is sensational. Go to Theragun.com/Rome right now. Get your Gen 4 Theragun today. The product is absolutely amazing. Once again, Theragun.com/Rome, R-O-M-E. Theragun.com/Rome. We're talking to Fred Warner, so I hear what you're saying. The individual honors are great, but it's about the ring. It's about the ultimate prize. When you've been to a Super Bowl and you've had that taste, how painful is it then not to go get that taste back?
Oh, man, so painful, especially when you don't even have a shot at getting it. You know, we didn't make the playoffs this past season, and so watching every week after the regular season ended, it was just torture, you know, especially coming off of a year where we made it to the Super Bowl. We didn't win. That was painful in itself, but not even have a shot, that really hurt. So there was a lot of things out of our control. I'm not going to sit here and make a ton of excuses, but there's a lot of things that we can clean up and get fixed, and we will, and we have to, in order to get back to that spot where we want to be.
We're talking to Fred Warner. You know, Fred, I know you're not going to use it as an excuse, but everybody knows how banged up that team was last year. I talked to a number of your teammates over the course of the year, and I was so impressed with the way that even though you guys lost man after man after man, nobody complained and everybody kept fighting and everybody kept battling no matter what was going on. Like, nobody packed it in. And even when the team had to move to Arizona, how do you explain that mentality and what was that process like for you?
Well, yeah, I think that's just what the type of guys that we have in the building, right? The culture of everybody having each other's back, you know, protecting the team, and regardless of the situation, it's always next man up. And, you know, that's what the NFL is. There's always going to be injuries and different things that happen, but it happened to the highest degree, I guess, for us this past season. And it was a credit to our guys and our coaching staff of helping guys prepare each week to get ready. There was always a different lineup, it seemed, every week of guys on the field and who were the starters. So, you know, I think that's the thing that everybody has to focus on going into this offseason is how can they prepare their bodies to the utmost degree to make sure that we're healthy going into the next season. And obviously there are things that you just are out of your control, but just limiting as many of the little factors that we can.
Fred Warner's joining us. So you know that guys are going to go down. That's part of the game. Also, you know that when you come back the following year, there are going to be guys that were in the locker room that no longer are. As an example, Richard Sherman's going to be a free agent. He said that he had a conversation with John Lynch where they both acknowledged that he probably would not be back with the team next year. So what will this defense be like without Richard Sherman, both as a player and a person?
Yeah, free agency is just such a crazy deal, right? You know, every year there's so much turnover. And just from me looking at, you know, how the team has changed over the years, I mean, the cultures remain the exact same. You know, we've kept a great foundation, and the cultures remain the same, but there's always a different locker room every year. You know, with Richard, I'm obviously he said different things and had several conversations with the team. You know, I don't know what's official and what's not yet, but just speaking on Rich and the impact that he's had on me, you know, as a player and just growing into my game, He's helped me all along the way, and we've had so many deep conversations about, you know, just being a leader and about ball and about life. And, you know, I can't say how much that means to me and how just valuable those conversations were. So if he is moving on to a different team, that, you know, that is a big loss, but that's just another opportunity for guys to step up, you know, such as myself, just to take on that leadership role and that player that the player in person he was in our locker room. So, you know, Richard is an outstanding human being, and if he is moving on, then we'll miss him.
We're talking to Fred Warner. You know, Fred, in terms of approach, John Lynch was talking about how you practice. Kyle Shanahan says the phrase he actually uses is intentional practice when it comes to the way you go about your business. Lynch says nobody embodies that more than you. So what does that mean, intentional practice, and what's your mindset when you hit the practice field?
Well, yeah, before going out on the practice field, I'm always going out there with a goal in mind. What do I want to accomplish for the day? And it's never just, you know, put on the pads, well, it's just another day. It's so easy to get caught up in just a simple routine of putting on your pads, going out there, just going through the motions, and you're not going to get any better doing that. I think what has allowed me to progress at such a fast rate is going out there and really having, like you said, intention. I go out there and I'm like, okay, today I'm going to practice on punching the ball out, or I'm going to work on tracking the near hip when I'm coming to balance to make a tackle. Just little things like that. It might seem small, but those small things add up over time, you know, because we do have so much practice time out there throughout the year. Or, I mean, honestly, not a lot of practice time, so you really got to utilize the practice that you do get. And that's what's helped me so much in my game, and learning that from different vets who have come along the way, such as like Malcolm Smith and Quan and guys like that, and also having a tremendous linebacker coach like D'Amico. Just those guys really embedded that into me, because I didn't come into the league just knowing that those things right away, right? It's taken guys help me along the way.
Fred Warner joining me for a few more moments. Fred, before I let you go, and I appreciate what you just said about the vets who came before you, let me flip you to the other side of the ball, because there's been some speculation, some rumors, some reports about Jimmy Garoppolo's future. I know you're focused on your work and what you can control, but what is your reaction when you hear the speculation and reports about Jimmy G?
Well, I mean, there's always going to be rumors and different reports every year, right, of different things that are going on within a team. And when the quarterback position is the most important one on the team, you know, that's my opinion. Obviously, that's going to be probably the biggest rumor going around. And there's a lot of rumors going around multiple teams with that position. And the thing with Jimmy is he's our guy. He's the leader. He's one of the leaders of this team. And he's going to continue to get better. I think he's only had one year where he's been able to stay healthy fully. So I know he's just going to continue to try and improve upon that. But he continues to get better and better. The arm talent is there. Everything that you want in a franchise quarterback is there. So, you know, I'm just looking forward to him continuing to get better. And us as a team, we're going to continue to ride with him and do whatever we can to improve the team.
Say, one last question for you. Earlier in the season when you were playing the Patriots, Tony Romo was calling the game, and he said, quote, you're an all-pro in every sense of the word. He also called you, quote, the best linebacker in ball. Really, really high praise. What's that feel like to hear that? And do you feel like at this point you are now the best linebacker in ball?
Man, it felt really surreal, honestly, when I first heard about it. You know, just a guy like Tony Romo to have such high praise for me, and just kind of seeing that I'm starting to get some of that recognition around the league. You know, all I've ever wanted was that respect, right? And now looking at where I'm sitting at in the league and the guys around me, just, you know, having the most all-pro votes out of linebackers this past season and doing things at a high level, all I really want to do is maximize my own ability, right? It's not about trying to compare myself to the rest of the league. I want to maximize what I can get out of myself. And I think if I do that and I focus on continuing to get 1% better every single day, then the product I'm going to put on the field is going to be exactly what I'm hoping for and what the team needs out of me. So that's what I'm looking forward to doing today, you know, and then tomorrow and then the next day. So,
dude, I love that mentality, actually. Like, so how are you going to get better today? If we're talking about a normal off-season day, you hang up the phone, you're done with me, where would you look to improve today? How do you get better today?
Well, you know, I think for Friday, obviously, I'll have my whatever workouts I have to do today. But a big thing for me since coming to the league, I think that's helped me a lot, is just working on a lot of mobility work, you know, just making sure that I'm getting my hips looser, my ankles more mobile to be able to – that's what ultimately is allowing me to stay healthy, you know, because you are putting such awkward positions on the field. And on top of that, just building the strength, because a lot of the time people want to build up the strength, but then they don't have the mobility. And so that's where the injuries happen. So – just focusing on all areas. Obviously, diet, nutrition, sleep are huge things that I try to dial into my routine. But, you know, it's all about the details, just the little things that you can do every single day that compound over time and result in big dividends.
I hear exactly what you're saying. He's an all-pro. He's a pro bowler coming off an enormous season. Fred Warner of the 49ers joining us once again. Fred, great to have you on. Love the message. I love the energy, and it's great talking to you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jim. Always a pleasure.
There are grips upon grips of stories that back that up. Stories that Mike himself has not denied. Stories that Mike himself has actually confirmed. Let me give you a couple examples. How about when Mike's Bulls beat Larry Bird's Pacers in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals? Larry finds Mike after the game to congratulate him, and Mike reportedly hits him with, quote, "You bitch, F you, take care. Now you can go work on that golf game of yours." End quote. I mean, that's an amazing exchange. In fact, there's nothing alleged or reported about that. That was caught on tape and aired in The Last Dance. Mike had just beaten Larry's Pacers. Larry, and it couldn't have been an easy thing to do, Larry seeks Mike out to congratulate him and pay his respects. And Mike hits him with, "Bleep you, bitch. Enjoy playing golf." To Larry Bird, no less. Who does that? Mike. That's who. Most people might say, hey, yeah, good game, much respect. Good game, good series, tough battle. You gave us all we could handle. Nice job. See you next year. All the best to the fam. Not Mike. Nope. Mike's more like, who won? You bitch. Bleep you. Go work on your golf game. Like, you're a bitch for not winning, and bleep you for even trying or thinking that you could win. The hell are you even doing talking to me anyway, B? Yeah, that's what I thought. Get the hell out of my face. So, when Kevin Garnett goes on Jimmy Kimmel's show last night and tells a story about being 19 and fresh out of high school playing Mike in Chicago, of course I'm going to believe anything that KG has to say about what that was like back then. I mean, there are a lot of urban myths surrounding the association and what may or may not have happened regarding a lot of different guys. But if somebody says something about Mike from back in the day, especially if that's somebody's Kevin Garnett, I'm going to assume it's true. So, Jimmy Kimmel said to KG, what do you got about Mike? What can you tell me about Mike? Give me a Mike story. And KG lays this out for him.
I'm young. I'm 19 years old. I'm in the league. I'm fresh. I graduated out of high school in Chicago. So we come back, we play the Bulls. And I was playing great. Probably the best I've ever played in my life at this point, right? And it's against the Bulls. And J.R. Ryder is having an unbelievable game, too. And I'm just feeling 19. I'm like, yeah, keep going. Killing him. Ooh. And in the short form of it, Jimmy, I woke up a sleeping dog. You know, and it wasn't pleasant. Yep. That big dog named Michael Jordan. Yeah. And he bit. He bites and he bit hard. And it turned really bad. And it turned bad quick, Jimmy. JR told me just to calm down. He's like, okay, yeah, I'm having a good game, but chill. You know, he right here. He can hear you. Like, okay, so keep doing.
All right, so I've heard a lot of Jordan stories that are very similar to that one. Somebody starts feeling themselves and they start running some junk. Jordan hears it and makes them eat every last word, makes them pay. Gary Payton, my guy, the glove, was a famous victim of the exact same thing too. But here's where it gets peak Mike. Check this next clip out, because even though Mike punished KG 25 years ago on the court, he still goes out of his way to remind him of that time every time he sees him.
Well, I like to think that it's definitely burnt into my brain. But wherever I see Jordan, he always does the same thing every time. He palms my head and he says, you remember I gave you 40 and three quarters? And I was like, man, go ahead. And then he has like this sidekick of people around him. He's like, hey, pull that up. And then the guy goes and pulls it up. And I'm like, what the? What is this? Who walks around with them? This is really Jordan Brand. Who walks around with content? Like teed up? Like, yeah, it was an experience in which I quit talking trash to Michael.
Michael has a guy who walks around with highlights packages. That is
already teed up, Jimmy.
That's an amazing story. KG says, who walks around with content? Jordan is walking around with an entourage who have his highlights queued up to show his victims. Like Garrett Ritt ignoring his job yesterday to scour Twitter and cherry pick the one nice tweet about him just to put in front of me to read on the air. Can't believe this is how Mike rolls. But I can. It's Mike. It's the most Mike thing ever. Of course, this guy walks around with people whose only job is to be his own version of on-demand SportsCenter. Except it's not SportsCenter. It's Mike Center. But it's not even Mike. making some lackeys show Kevin Garnett the tape from 25 years ago, man. It's so much more than that. It's so much more than that. I love that part of the story where KG says whenever he sees Mike, not only does he remind him of that time that he dropped 40 on him in three quarters, but he palms the ticket's bald head.
But wherever I see Jordan, he always does the same thing every time. He palms my head. He says, you mean I gave you 40 and three quarters?
What is the most disrespectful thing about that? The fact that he's got somebody whose job is to have the video at the ready so we can talk more junk about something that happened a quarter of a century ago? Or the fact that he's palming Kevin Garnett's head? And remember, Mike is about a half a foot shorter than Kevin. He's got to reach up to disrespect him that way. I mean, another reason to go, right? If somebody lays a hand on you, if somebody physically touches you, he's not only physically touching KG, he's putting a palm on his bald head. If that's not a reason to go, what is? You know what that is, aside from being really disrespectful? It's the ultimate older brother move. You know, palming somebody else's bald dome.
Brother.
Like, Mike is just going to stick his tongue out, take off from the free throw line, and dunk KG's melon through the rim. And you know Mike would try it. But I'm not surprised by any of this. I mean, The Last Dance essentially was 10 episodes of Mike pulling up YouTube and showing the world his highlights. In fact, last week, I had Kenny Anderson on my podcast. I asked him how accurate he thought that entire docuseries was.
That's Mike, you know, through playing against him and knowing how he was in life, that's just how he rolled. That's just what he did. You know, he controlled his documentary somewhat. Some of the players was mad at it. Some wasn't. Some were. And, you know, it's just tough. But you're talking about one of the best, if not the best player that ever played the game. And he won six championships with the Bulls. So, you know, he could say whatever you want to say somewhat. But you don't know what's true or not true.
Well said, Kenny. It is Mike. I mean, we may not know what's true and what's not, but Mike can pretty much say and do whatever the hell he wants. He can call Larry Bird a bitch. He can palm Kevin Garnett's bald head while making him watch highlights from like 40 years ago that some crony had already locked and loaded on the off chance they ran into KG. Who's going to stop him? I'm sure Mike's got a whole list of his greatest hits on the ready, in the phone, so he can remind everybody of how he did them back in the day. Including KG, especially KG. Guarantee if he were to happen to run into Larry, he'd have lots of highlights queued up for Larry. Are you craving some protein after a good workout? I know I am. Before, I did not have a very good plan, but I do now. Listen, do not make a shake. Don't eat a bar. Grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper instead. Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty, it's tender, and it's made from real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. And it goes wherever you go. Just look for Old Trapper. It's in the Clearview bag. That way you can see exactly the quality you're getting. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, ask for it by name, because I'm telling you, no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? Jim Trotter, my man. What's going on, Jim? How are you?
I'm great, Romy. How you doing, man?
Good, good. Great to have you back, Jim. Before I talk to you about football, I do want to ask you, though. I saw you on the golf course yesterday, and you had, Jim, what looked like a vulture hanging out at the tee box with you. How did that go, and how did your round end up going?
It was a turkey vulture who had just caught its dinner for the evening. And let's just say I left the tee box to the turkey vulture. I was not going to intrude. And my round went well. I mean, I had as many birdies as triples. So for me, that's a good day. So no complaint.
Good to hear it. Jim Trotter, my guest. All right, Jim, I want to get into the details of Russell Wilson and his situation. But before we break that thing down, what do you make of the dynamic right now between the quarterback and the franchise?
You know, Jim, for me, it's not surprising at all. You know, Pete has created a culture up there from the very beginning where he wanted his players to be able to speak their minds. And to me, this is no exception. So it's just that it's taken Russell this long to finally come out and say it publicly. So I'm not surprised at all by this. And in fact, if anything surprised me is that it took this long for Russell to say what he's feeling about the situation.
We're talking to Jim Trotter. So, Jim, what about the situation? You've got Pete Carroll, of course, who's all about a strong running game and a nasty defense, and the sense has been for a while that Russ would like to throw the ball some more and have a little more to say in what's going on with the offense. So how does that play out? I mean, can the two of these guys coexist with these two divergent viewpoints? How will it go?
I think at some point it's going to come to a head, and I think one of them ends up moving on. The one thing, the reason that I'm not surprised by this, or the thing that has surprised me to some degree, is that I remember having a conversation with Pete Carroll some time ago where he talked about his experience at USC. And he talked about the year that Carson Palmer won the Heisman Trophy, and the team finished 500, I believe. And Pete said at that point he never again wanted to have a team that was so dependent on the quarterback that it ended up impacting the final outcome of the team. And so when you saw these things going on with Russell Wilson, and even last year, the first half of the season, where they were throwing the ball like crazy and Russell was putting up crazy numbers and was in the MVP conversation, I just kept thinking to myself, man, this isn't the Pete Carroll offense or team that I know that he desires. So over the second half of the season, as outlined in that terrific The Athletic piece that was written about this, it indicated all those things that this was not the offense that Pete desires. It was not the style of football that Pete desires. And that's why I say I think it's going to come to a head at some point, because Russell is thinking legacy. Pete is thinking victories and formula and process and all of that. And right now the two of those things don't jive. Russell looks at what's going on with Tom Brady, what, you know, Drew Brees has done, what Peyton Manning did, all of that. And he wants his name to be in that group, and he wants it to be prominently in that group. And one of the ways he believes to do that is by putting up numbers that are insane. And that's why I say I just don't think this thing is going to last long term.
We're talking to Jim Trotter. So, Jim, if it comes down to that and it's a matter of picking one guy or the other, who's going to win that battle?
That's an interesting question. Look, we all know it's a quarterback-driven league, but Pete has taken teams to two Super Bowls. And what kind of cachet does that give him there? It's interesting, Jim, that the closer you are to Seattle, people believe that it will be Pete who will win that battle. The further away you are from Seattle, the more people think Russell Wilson will win that battle. So I don't know that I have the answer for you on that. I just think that it depends on at what point this thing plays itself out. I do know, or I do believe, I should say, that if Seattle is able to come up with another quarterback that it believes it can win with, then I would say that Pete wins that. If the franchise can't come up with another quarterback, then the odds would have to shift towards Russell.
We're talking to Jim Trotter. You know, Jim, last summer you did a piece for NFL.com where you spoke to a player at each position, and you asked them the three most important qualities of a successful NFL head coach. Richard Sherman told you, quote, Pete has his compete, compete, compete philosophy. He's got a whole psychological aspect that he goes through with, and he's got a routine that he goes through and puts his players through. So what do you make of that? And does Pete's approach get old and wear on guys after a while?
Sure, I think it wears on them to some degree where they feel like what he's saying is not actually what's happening. And for years now, there have been folks who have believed, even Richard, back to his time in Seattle, that Russell was treated differently than everyone else, that Pete was not as hard on Russell as he was on other players, particularly in team meetings. So I think that's what plays on players more than just the message of always compete. And the question becomes, is he being sincere to that message if he's being softer on some guys than others? So from that standpoint, you know, what Richard said is it's true. And, you know, Pete had, look, it's interesting now that we are hearing him come out and speak more definitively about Russell or any flaws that he sees than we've heard at any point during Russell's career. And I think part of that is Russell understanding his position in this league, understanding his talents, his ability, and understanding his power. And one of the things that we are seeing from NFL players today, more of them are being willing to flex their muscle because they are understanding or believing that they do have power. And for a long time in this league, I don't think players believe that, but we've seen that shift over the last 5 to 10 years where I think players are coming into their own in terms of understanding what their power is in this league and what their leverage is in this league.
I think you're right. I think it's a very good point. Jim Trotter is joining us. Jim, something else about that piece that jumps out is the note about Pete and his sons, Brennan and Nate, who were both on the staff at one point before Brennan took a job at the University of Arizona. In a way, it seems unusual, but in the NFL, it really isn't. How concerned then is the league about nepotism and cronyism among coaches?
I don't know how concerned the league is about it. I can tell you that black coaches or minority coaches are concerned about it. Because the reality is right now, Jim, I just got some data this morning, and it's league data, so it's not my reporting from that standpoint. But what it said is that there are 73 coaches in the NFL who are either related to an active or former NFL coach. And of those 73, 55 are white, which some might expect that number to be a little higher. But where it becomes an issue is the feeling is that those hires, nepotism hires, are jumping to the front of the line in terms of getting to positions that typically lead to head coaching opportunities. And so that's a problem. Right now, 10 of the 32 head coaches in the NFL are either the sons, fathers, or brothers of someone who was a former NFL coach. And so from that standpoint and talking to minority coaches, they feel that nepotism is a huge problem in the NFL at this point as it relates to the advancement of people of color.
We're talking to Jim Trotter. So, Jim, also earlier this week, you had a piece for NFL.com that discussed the fact that in 2020, there were a record number of African-American quarterbacks. There was not a lot of hype around that, despite the history of race being a factor in evaluating quarterbacks. So how would you describe the role that race plays in evaluating quarterbacks now as compared to the past?
Oh, you know, Jim, with that piece, what it was, the way it came about is prior to the games, there were four games in which there are head-to-head matchups between quarterbacks who are black. And neither Steve Weiss, my co-host, nor I had even thought about it. And for Doug, it was significant because you have to remember, Doug, back in 1979, when he faced off against Viz Evans, it was the first time in league history that two black quarterbacks had met head-to-head in the NFL as starters. And so for Doug, this was a significant moment. And so I said, I want to reach out to people who were impacted by race at that position historically, whether that goes back to Jimmy Ray, to Sherm Lewis, to Warren Moon, and then to some other guys, Byron Leftwich, Tony Dungy, who had to change positions coming out of college, and just ask them the question of whether or not we have moved past the point of race being a factor in the evaluation of NFL quarterbacks. And to a man, they all agree that progress has been made. But they could not all say that it is no longer a factor. And one of the points that they made is the fact that we still identify quarterbacks by race. We will say, you know, a black quarterback. And they said, until we get past that point, then no, we haven't completely crossed the finish line as it relates to the evaluation. And we're even seeing that in the draft process this year again, when you read some of the code language that's being used for a player like Justin Fields. Bucky Brooks spoke to that in my article. So have we moved past it completely? No. Have we made progress? Yes.
My guest is Jim Trotter. Now, speaking of your podcast, Jim, recently you had Terry Fontenot on. What did you take away from that conversation with him, especially when it comes to how he's approaching the offseason with the Falcons?
That they're open for business with that fourth pick in the draft. You know, if they have to use it, they will. But if they can find an offer that allows them to move down and get, you know, more picks and supplement that roster, or if there's something there, the player that they believe they really want, and there's an opportunity to move up, it's in play. You know, Terry is the type of guy, he's not going to show his cards. One of the things he will tell you is that he listens to every interview that's done. He reads every story because he said people around the NFL have loose lips and you can gain a lot of information from that. So he wasn't going to tell us much, particularly when I pressed him and said, are there any untouchables on your roster? And he basically wouldn't answer that. He danced around it. So from my standpoint, Terry Fontenot, I think, is going to be tremendous as a GM. He's so smart. He works hard. And he's thoughtful in terms of his approach to things. So I'm really interested to see how ultimately that is going to play out in Atlanta, because I do think he's one of the bright minds in the game.
I'm talking to Jim Trotter for a few more moments. Jim, what about the Texans situation and Deshaun Watson? He's made it pretty clear, this is not where I want to be. I'm not going to play for a new head coach, and this is not handled well. I mean, he's in a really, really unhappy place, it would appear. How do you think that plays out?
I think at this point they're going to test him. I think it's a game of chicken, and they're going to see just how serious he is about not wanting to be there. Look, part of the reason during the interview process, they made it clear to the candidates that they wanted to retain Tim Kelly as their offensive coordinator, which they did. And part of the reason for that is, my understanding from talking to people, is they believe that this situation with Deshaun could drag out until even week one. And they felt that if he came back in week one, they wanted to have an offensive system and a play caller in place that Deshaun was comfortable with, and that's Tim Kelly. Deshaun had his best season under Tim. So from that standpoint, that's what they've done. Having done that, I believe they're going to play this out, and I don't think they're going to trade him. Teams that I've talked to that have at least made the call to Houston to inquire about whether or not the Texans are willing to move Deshaun have gotten a firm no if they've gotten an answer at all, you know, gotten their call returned. So from that standpoint, at this point, I expect Deshaun to be back in Houston. And look, we know this, Romy, based on history in this league. Deadlines spur action. And when players start to lose money, that's when we find out what they're really all about or how strong their convictions are. And I think the Texans are willing to test that with Deshaun.
So obviously you don't want to have an unhappy player. If they don't move him, and he's always been the ultimate soldier and team guy, what kind of a mindset and headspace would he be in if they don't move him and he does have to show up?
I'm betting not good. In stating the obvious. But I will say this to you, too. Since when do teams care about a player's mental mindset in many cases? You know, I do believe this, and I don't have any evidence of this, so hear me out on that. But I do believe there are owners in the league that are saying at this point, look, these players are getting a little too full of themselves. They're starting to feel that they have too much power. And I would not be surprised at all if there have been owners who have said to Cal McNair in Houston, look, you need to get a hold of this because we need to get these players under control and not give them that perception or belief that they have more power than what they do. I have no proof of that. I just believe that based on the history of this league and the way things work. And I would not be surprised if those conversations have taken place with Cal McNair.
Yeah, I would not doubt that either, Jim. Now, when I see you on video these days, you look like a million. How is the Peloton treating you, and what is the secret, my man?
Romy, actually, I've gotten too skinny on this thing. I'm down 25 pounds,
wow,
three pant sizes, and I'm actually trying now to put a little weight on, or muscle mass, if you will. I stopped lifting and all of that and just started riding the bike and doing core work, which is great. It got some of the weight off and all of that, but the problem is now I'm too skinny, and you know, I feel like I'm wearing my father's suits when I put on my old clothes, so I had to go out and buy some new clothes, and you know, that gets expensive. So I'm just trying to find a happy medium at this point, but this is the life of the pandemic. I haven't traveled. Next month will be exactly 1 year that I have not gotten on a plane or gone anywhere. And for the most part, you know, it's been stay at home, ride the bike, do some core work, that sort of stuff, and try and find an escape from the madness that's going on.
Gavin, what's up? What's going on? How are you?
Hey, Jim. So I got a message to the boomer army of clones out there that tried to light me up after my call yesterday for not having a deep enough voice. Well, let me tell you something, clones. I'm new. I'm fresh. I'm only 16 years old. Yep, some of you called it. I'm sorry I haven't spent the last 57 years burning death sticks or gargling moonshine like you clones. So next time you think about cracking me up, just take a deep breath, push that big rectangle box into your VCR, sit down in your dirty recliner, and watch your MASH rerun. That's all I got, clones. I'm out.
My man, Gavin, not a boy. That a boy, Gavin. Hey, Gavin, did you ever think you would hear these words? Rack him.
Rack him.
You got that boomer army? That teenager's got a little something for you. He's not going to apologize for the way he sounds. He hasn't had all those decades to burn all those lung darts or gargle all that moonshine. So sit back down in your dirty recliners, boomer army, and pop that big rectangle back into its box and watch your MASH reruns. What's up, Johnny? How are you?
Hey, Jim. Good to talk with you. Hey, Gavin. Dude, nice call, young man. Dude, give that guy a golden doodle and a Pop-Tart. Anyhow, on to bigger business. Hey, listen, Jim, What's Your Beef segment is really hot right now. We're really enjoying that because there's multiple ways to get in. But then Wells calls, and that's problematic because, you know, he's all over the place. And, Wells, you made the same damn phone call 2 weeks in a row.
microwavable popcorn and butter? Jeez. Anyhow, rumor has it that Wells is developing his own butter. He sent a sample to the FDA for green light, and they wrote him a harshly worded letter that said, get off us. Anyhow,
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Let's go to Eugene. Mike, good to have you. Mike, how are you?
Good. How are you, Jim?
Good.
I'm an infrequent listener, but I wanted to weigh in on Gavin.
Go right ahead.
Yeah, Doogie Wowser, MC, Mad Clone, welcome to the jungle. I'm probably old enough to be Rich's father, but...
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like this.
Listen. Just so you know, I didn't come in here with nothing to talk about. I came in here at the same time I do every single morning. I came in here and did the same types of things that I do every single morning. I'm just trying on a Friday to get you all involved. I'm trying to roll telephone calls. I'm trying to do something a little bit different. That's what I'm trying to do. Hey, Luke, what's going on?
Hey, Jim, how you doing? Luke Walton here.
What's up, Coach? How you feeling? What's going on?
Well, I can't be too happy about last night's game. You know, we got a lot of work to do. It's been a tough year. Everybody's probably saying the same thing. Not enough off-season time, but just a difficult time. But, you know, basketball, life, whatever.
Hey, Luke, why did you get after that clipboard with the aggression and hostility that you displayed last night? What were you thinking in that moment?
You know, sometimes a guy loses his cool. It's been a little tough dealing with the players, especially the young ones. Here. Don't get a lot of response, and I'm just having a little bit of trouble.
Hey, Luke, really quickly, what's your middle name?
Pearl.
Yeah, no, it's not.
That's not a good call. No.
No, it's not.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call.
As fake callers go, that one was pretty good. He had Luke's Darth Vader voice down pretty well. Welcome to the jungle. What's going on? My name is Jim Rome. A very good Monday to you. So how you living? How was that weekend? Nice to have you here. So what did you get into this weekend? What did you do? What did you see? What did you watch? What do you want to bring to it? Step it up.
Step your game
Why don't
up.
We start in the city of champions? After all, I'm right down the road.
Yeah! What does it mean to win here?
Didn't hit me till just
now. Boy. And that's why Aaron Rodgers dropped that city of champions gloss, because Max dropped it in that Greenside interview.
City of champions.
KJ Wright. One thing you never do is talk about another man's money. So I'm going to talk about another man's money. Would you be willing to give them a hometown discount?
No, man, I do way too much on the football field to take a discount. That makes absolutely no sense.
Holy crap. Blades was out before he hit the canvas. I thought that he had left not only the building, but the entire planet.
He could turn into Undertaker's
sister. I guess anything is possible. Anything except dude waking up from that shot. Rick Barnes joining us. What separates a guy who always wins from others who think they work hard and would consider themselves winners?
Now, that's a great question, because I tell you what, that's the hardest thing. When you're recruiting a guy, it's hard to tell him, hey, you're lazy, you don't play hard enough.
His English suddenly got better.
Again, bad enough to think it, but even worse to say it. Your room. Your room is not the Rotary Club, dummy.
Seen my big tummy out there.
See my big tummy out there. This big tummy's full.
Check and see if your cabin was still standing, because you probably don't understand how cold it
gets. Email.
Those fat asses only helping their neighbors because they expect food in return. Unwar type 2 diabetes.
Diabetes.
Kenny Moore the second. We talked about the fact that you were not named to the Pro Bowl.
You know, it doesn't sit right.
That's not right.
Whenever I get home, you know, I lay my head on the pillow at night. I don't think it's right. It's not okay. You're right.
Wow, what a finish. Losing last night was not a backbreaker. There is no reason to smash the panic button yet, Laker fan. But if I were you, I would know where it is. Especially since Utah is looking to break your dudes' faces tomorrow night.
Are you in bed right now?
Dan Wojcicki.
I'll be on the couch or something like that. And you get a little nervous that you're going to get caught in an embarrassing, not like a compromising, like, you know, tubing situation, but like something where you're just going to look stupid.
I want to find the guy who thought this whole thing up. Stand him in front of the plate. Give him hardest fastball I can and hit him right in his knucklehead.
Kenny Drake's my guest.
But I've always had a love for outer space, soaking knowledge of people that are literally out of this world.
Leonard Hamilton, my guest.
I'm a proponent of doing something substantial. And right now, when I look around and see a lot of our politicians saying, there's no problems in our society, everything's fine. Well, we got a problem.
Tiger Woods has been injured.
Over the past 14 months, we've had a lot of reminders of how life can change in an instant. And this is yet another. So here's hoping that Tiger recovers as quickly and as soundly as possible. And not so he can make a return to the tour, but for his family and for him personally. My moniker is Van Smack. But time and place, right? If you want to talk some smack, that's fine. But I'm not going to go with this garbage I'm seeing on Twitter. I'm only going with the facts. I'm only going with what we know. And most of all, you want to treat it with respect. He is Michael Malone. What's it mean to the rest of the team when your best player is modeling that level of work ethic?
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought that up, Jim. Not only a great point, but a really important point. And I think it comes down to just a commitment to himself, to his teammate, and the organization.
Your beef segment.
And there's Danny again doing his Peloton. I don't care if you exercise, bro. Stop telling me about it.
Read a manual, you idiots.
Nick Faldo's got bats in the cave.
My beef is still with microwave popcorn.
Half Swedish, half German, and 9 years younger than that 43-year-old piece of rat vomit.
Hello, newsflash. You got an apartment that allows dogs.
Well done.
Dan Wessel.
Gets to an existential question. Is a taco a sandwich? And then here's another one. Is a hot dog a taco? There's a lot going on here, Jim, that not everyone in the country's aware of.
Catches every ball thrown in his general direction. Man, that takes me back. Such good times. Such good memories. Don't get so caught up in the genius of that song that you miss the genius of his takes.
Because Frank Vogel sucks. Frank Vogel is just one of LeBron's puppets, and Martin Gasol looks like he should be playing in the community rec league.
That's a damn terrible phone call, and he's a damn good coach. Hey, Gavin.
Hey, John.
You know what sucks?
What?
That call. Josh Heupel.
Some dead time before they have to go to class. You know, so we have a little dodgeball tournament. I think it's important that your players have fun, and they get to know us as a staff.
I had a ball.
Fred Warner joining me for a few more moments.
The thing with Jimmy is he's our guy. The arm talent is there. Everything that you want in a franchise quarterback is there. So we're going to continue to ride with him.
Push that big rectangle box into your VCR. Sit down in your dirty recliner and watch your match rewind.
You want to talk about a jungle bounce back? This kid was getting murdered yesterday. Today he runs the jungle.
Dude, give that guy a golden doodle.
Doogie Wowzer, MC, Mad Clone, welcome to the jungle. I'm probably old enough to be Rich's father.
I don't get a lot of response, and I'm just having a little bit of trouble reading.
Hey, Luke, really quickly, what's your middle name?
Pearl.
What's your middle name?
Good catching up with you as well.
Weak take late.
This is not a cafeteria.
That's the dude I know.
Panda Express.
Maybe hire the guy from the Micro Machine. I just got some data.
Take that for data.
Always a pleasure, Jim.
One of the great moments.
Long cylindrical object.
Maybe we can have three stashes.
All right.
Thank you.
Good night.
All right.
Now. Good night now.